Near FM.
The Week in Review with Declan Ralph. For stories you haven't heard anywhere else on the radio this week.
This is Near FM. Hi there, I'm Declan Ralph and welcome along to The Week in Review. Now, as usual today, I'll take a look at the stories that affect us, but you won't have heard much about them anywhere else on the radio this week. So I'll feature stories too about people and groups that you may know or are interested in. Indeed, you might even be involved with them. And of course, I'll have a look at the local stories that affect you as well. Now, if you'd like to get involved in the show or you'd like me to feature something on the show that you're interested in, well, you can contact me right now by text to 087 69 44 500. That's 087 69 44 500. That's while the show is on the air. Or you can get in touch at any time on Twitter at NearFM, at Declan Ralph, hashtag Week in Review. Now, coming up shortly, but a little later than we usually do, it's coming up in about 10 minutes, Ken will be here with the local stories. Things to get brighter at Dublin Airport. One of the top parks worldwide is, believe it or not, up the road in Santry. A 30-kilometre speed limit for the Phoenix Park from the 28th of February. A commemorative silver fern planted in Malahide to mark Watangi Day. I'm sure Ken will correct me if I haven't pronounced that right. Go on, Sophie. All will be revealed. It can be as large as you like. And, oh no, Mr. Macari. Looking forward to hearing what they're about, Ken. Dublin's intimate, adventurous and alternative cello festival is back. The Pike Cello Festival is bringing... The Spike Even Cello Festival is bringing audiences and world-class musicians from home and abroad together over 3 days this weekend to enjoy, celebrate and explore cello music. The festival offers lots to excite and delight audiences, including events for children and even a chance to relax with a blissful hybrid of yoga and cello. Co-founder and co-director of the Spike Cello Festival, Mary Barncutt, will join Sarah in just a minute's time to tell us more about that. Dublin City Council has a new publication that captures the life and work of Sarah Cecilia Harrison, a woman of talent, principle and drive who immersed herself in the political and social fabric of Dublin life. Harrison's contributions to the artistic and political life of Dublin have previously been overlooked and she's become one of the forgotten women in her history books. But this book highlights her life and her achievement, not least her beautiful artworks. And Dr. Margarita Capock, art historian, writer and curator, who is the key contributor to this book about this fantastic accomplished woman, will tell Ken all about it in about 20 minutes time. Just after that then, just after one, Sarah will be back to take a look at the local events taking place. Then an intriguing new work by the Liz Roach Company comes to the Project Arts Centre stage from Thursday to Saturday next as the Here Trio is presented. The contemporary dance production conveys a timely exploration of borders and belonging. The Here Trio is choreographed by the internationally acclaimed Liz Roach and features dancers Ryan O'Neill, Gloria Ross Abelana and Lucia Kickham. And to find out more, Liz Roach will be here to chat to Sarah at about a quarter past one. And then, if we've time, and I'm sure we have, just before we finish, we'll squeeze in the local jobs and volunteering opportunities as well. So, in a change to what we normally do, we're going to go straight to Sarah, and Sarah is going to have a chat with Mary Barncutt, who's the festival and co-founder of Co-Director. Hiya, Sarah.
Hi, Declan. Great to be back. And absolutely. It is fantastic to be able to chat about two, and there's lots more as well. Really exciting events happening in Dublin over the next couple of days with live events and theatre and all the rest. Very much back in action. The Spike Cello Festival is just one of those really, I guess, first kind of festivals now over the last couple of weeks that's been able to bring audiences together with musicians and taking place in a number of different ways and lots of events to try out and enjoy and celebrate. And it's all, as you said, about cello music. I am delighted to be joined now by the co-founder and co-director of the Spike Cello Festival, Mary Barnicus, who's on the line now to tell us a little bit more about the Spike Cello Festival. Hi, Mary. Thank you so much for joining us. And I guess that would be a super place to start. You know, what exactly is happening as part of the festival in Dublin this weekend?
Hi. Thank you so much for having me online. The Spike Cello Festival, it's in its fifth year now, and it's an alternative cello festival, which just basically means it's for all things that the cello can do that are not classical music. So we've got a number of things going on to that end, and we've got our two main live events are in the Pepper Canister. We had one last night, and there's one this evening with a blues singer called Ayanna Witcher Johnson, who's over from England, who stands up with her cello, accompanies herself, and she's just absolutely fantastic. And we were blown away last night. We're going to be blown away tonight, I'm sure. And the set part of that same concert is a thing called Cello Vision, which is Romanian cellist Adrian Muntu, who's based down in Connemara. And it's kind of lights, vision, screens, and cello.
Okay.
It's a real immersive.
You can see the alternative aspect coming in there. It's really something for everybody.
There you go.
Thinking outside the box a little bit.
We've got Yoga Cello Online, which is Yin Yoga with Kitty McGuire. That's happening tomorrow at 11 o'clock in the morning. And previous years she's done it live, but we've got a whole bunch of online workshops this year. We've kind of decided to take what we've learned from the lockdowns and try and do some use it to our advantage, if you like. And there's people from all over the world doing workshops. So this morning there was one from Australia and how to practice.
That's really cool. Yeah, I think there's opportunities there for like bringing people and players in particular who are part of that cello community around the world together. You know, I mean, is the festival kind of specifically kind of for people who are very much steeped in the music world, or is there something for newcomers? I know you have children's events as well, so there's really something for everyone there.
I think it's definitely, we're hoping it's something for everyone. I mean, the only binding element between all the different parts of the festival is it's all cello based. You don't have to play the cello because the music is so different and the workshops are so different. A lot of them are for just people that might have a violin or be a beginner string player. Some of them are just nice to come and watch, particularly Saskia Raudahas is going to be doing her workshop from New Delhi in India, and that's I've done a workshop with her before. She's just amazing.
So people can have their cello at the ready, their instruments at the ready to take part in that then. Is that how that typically works? Or?
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to. It might be an advantage if you want. You can observe or you can participate with any stringed instrument you might have lying around. Or if you're actually a string player, you might be able to kind of learn some rags. It's fantastic.
And what is it about the cello and in particular alternative non-classical aspects of the cello maybe that, you know, sparked the inspiration in all of this community? You know, what's particularly special about the cello that you've created a whole festival around that music?
I think it's really versatile. I kind of think of it a bit like the guitar. Nobody thinks it's weird that guitars play non-classical music anymore.
Yeah.
And they're not dissimilar instruments, except the cello can actually play tunes with a bow as well. So we can do all the things that a guitar can do, and a double bass, and it's just incredibly versatile. So classical music is just like one arm of its reach, and it's really nice to explore and promote the other ones.
And if people would like to, maybe they're tempted, you know, they go along to some of the events and they're tempted to learn the instrument or just to dip their toe in the water, you know, are there many opportunities like that for people to find out more, or is the Cello Fest a good place to start, I guess?
I think it's a good entry place for anyone. I mean, you can have a little browse on the website. It's Spike, it's called Spike because the spike sticks out at the bottom of the cello. SpikeCelloFest.com.
There we go, yeah.
There you go. SpikeCelloFest.com has everything on it, and you can have a little browse. There's a lot of free events today going on in Dublin. We call them cello installations because we're just installing cellos in art galleries and museums around the place. And it's free for people to just walk past and go, oh, there's a cello.
Well, I think no better excuse to get out and about, and like you say, like that, lots happening. Really exciting things. I'm going to be filling the Pepper Canister tonight too, and it is an iconic and fantastic venue for music as well. So just to give us that website address maybe one more time if people want to head and find all the information on it.
It's Spike, S-P-I-K-E, cellofest.com.
brilliant. That's nice and memorable. And look, there's loads happening there. I think you could speak for a long time, but I know, yeah, you're busy and there's lots of events on there as well. So the very best of luck with it all. And we'd encourage people to get along to spikedtelefest.com, find out about it, and maybe pop into town, and you never know where you might be kind of pleasantly ambushed by a cello today. But enjoy it all.
Exactly.
And thanks so much, Mary.
Thanks for having me. Thanks. Okay. Bye.
Thanks.
Thanks a million to Mary, and thanks a million to Sarah. And Sarah, you're going to stay with us because you'll be coming back to do another interview a little bit later on with Liz Roach, all about her new production, and also the events just after 1 o'clock. So we'll chat to you then.
Looking forward to you. Absolutely, definitely. Thank you.
Local Stories with Ken Kilbride.
And Ken is here a little bit later than usual, Ken, with the local stories, but that's okay. Things are to get brighter at Dublin Airport.
So yeah, the DAA has lodged plans in recent days with Fingal County Council for a renewable energy project. So the site is bounded by St Margaret's Road and Harristown Lane, which means it's going to be down the end of the airport. And so the development will consist of the installation of ground-mounted solar photovoltaic and array. And the DAA spokesperson...
Yeah, what?
Photovoltaic. It's a solar farm, and it's to generate electricity for the airport.
Deadly.
And they're saying if it works, it's going to supply about 8 to 10% of the all the electricity required for the airport.
That's great, isn't it?
It is. It's really an interesting one. You know, there's loads of space out there at the bottom of the airport, so you know, stick in the wind farm. And what they're saying is they hope the construction on the wind farm will commence towards the end of 2022. However, any parties wishing to make a submission to Fingal County Council on the scheme have until March the 10th to do so, and the decision on the application is due in late March. So that could be interesting. Lots of photovoltaic cells down the bottom of the Dublin Airport.
That sounds good, if only I knew what they were. Something else I didn't know, and who knew? We have one of the top parks worldwide up the road in Santry.
This only came out 2 days ago. So, so Santry Domain, the community garden, is holding its own in the best green spaces from 16 countries around the world. So the award-winning community garden is run by volunteers and won an impressive 8 green flags last year in 2021. So if anybody does go into the garden, is you go in, it's down in the far bottom corner, imagine 11 o'clock. I remember a few years ago walking by it loads of times, and when you looked in the gate, there was a little pond and there was an upside down car in it. So the volunteers have done a great job there. This was they did the Green Flags Awards, which is sort of the more serious side. They did an online poll. And you know, out of the 16 countries around the world, this was in the top 10. So congratulations to all the work they're doing there.
Well done, yeah. And that didn't exist when we were growing up.
Oh, it did?
Did it?
Yeah, just a big wall on it.
Right. You just, yeah.
You didn't know it was there.
Didn't know it was there. Right. Interesting. Now, something else that's interesting, you'd probably walk quicker now up to the middle of the Phoenix Park than going at 30 kilometres an hour from the 28th of February. This was one of the temporary measures. Beware of temporary measures. That came in during COVID.
So this is a 30-kilometre speed limit will be introduced into Phoenix Park as part of the new mobility plan, and the changes will come into force at the end of the month. And these are the first phases of a 7-year reorganisation of all the traffic. And they say the reduction from 50 kilometres would see a marked difference in driver behaviour, according to Minister for State for Office of Public Works, Patrick O'Donovan. And what I was going to say is the marked difference in driver behaviour is they'll be sitting looking out the window as cyclists go by them. Now, the thing is, cyclists also shouldn't be breaking the speed limit, but when a car stopped in front of you, you just go by it. And so, again, this is going to be great fun. As you say, they'll be probably walking faster.
Absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Now, look, we're all for safety and all of that, but I mean, there is a limit to how slow you can actually drive a car as well. Now, a commemorative silver fern has been planted in Malahide to mark Watangi Day. Have I got that right?
Yeah. So basically, we're talking about Watangi Day. So we have St. Patrick's Day, the French have Bastille Day, New Zealand has Watangi Day.
Right.
So what they're doing is commemorating the close ties between Ireland and New Zealand. So Ambassador Brad Burgess dropped out to Malahide Castle to plant the special silver fern. These are a species endemic to New Zealand, dating back to the Philocene epoch, which, I mean, if you did geography in school, 5 million to 2 million years ago. And it's accepted as a symbol of national identity since the 1880s, and a special significance to the Maori people for the elegance of the shape of the fronds, which stood for strength, stubborn resistance, and enduring power. And the ambassador said, Watangi Day is a real important celebration for all New Zealanders around the world. It's the birth date of our modern nation. And there's a significant Irish connection too, as William Hobson, who crafted the treaty, was born in Waterford and became the first governor. So the Irish get everywhere.
They sure do. And look, no more kind of New Zealand-y or New Zealander type name than Brad Burgess. I mean, he could only come from New Zealand.
Oh, indeed, yeah. I was thinking that myself. Yeah. I said, there's only one place he come from.
Not like Jimmy O'Brien or something like that. He's a Brad Burgess. Well, well done, Brad, and fair play to you. Now, go on, Sophie. What's all that about? We're cheering on Sophie, are we?
Indeed, we are. Yeah. So, Sophie O'Donnell, and she's from fifth class in School Katrina Killeen National School in Coolock. And she won a nationwide poster competition to raise awareness on carbon monoxide and the dangers that it can pose in our homes. So, last September, Gas Networks Ireland, in partnership with Junior Achievement Ireland, called for entries to its carbon monoxide safety poster competition. The entry received hundreds of amazing entries, but it was Sophie's poster with a drawing of Tommy McInerney, the well-known fictional animated canary, well-known is one word, who raises awareness of carbon monoxide safety on behalf of Gas Networks Ireland. So she's won the top prize, loads of entries around the country, and she's down in School Katrina in Coolock. So congratulations to her in fifth class.
Yeah, well done, Sophie O'Driscoll. Now, I don't know what these next two stories are about, Ken, but I'm just wondering, are they both connected to fish and chips or something? Because the second one's Mr. McCary, and that probably, I'm thinking, has some sort of fish and chip connection. But the first headline you have here is, it can be as large as you like. So I'm just wondering, is that like a go large in Supermax or McDonald's or something?
No. This is we had Frank McDonald on a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about planning in Dublin, and he was talking about his new book, The Future History of Dublin. So again, we've talked about these plans. So there's under the new proposals, new buildings could theoretically be any height, but will be restricted by the makeup and their surroundings and the impact on the local skyline. So in the draft development plan, the council says that there's a new policy to manage the height of buildings throughout the city. And this policy is based on a combination of location and performance. And the council says that it will prioritise the development in key inner city, what they call their key urban villages. So technically you could build a 30 kilometre or 30 storey building anywhere in the city, but if it's overshadowing lots of residential, they're not going to do it. But somewhere in the city centre they might. So we talked about this before. The problem with Dublin is it can either go up or go out. It looks like they're talking about going up.
Absolutely, yeah.
And if you don't want that, it's your city. They're making the development plans. Get involved.
Yeah, one of the sites they're talking about is the Hickey site down at the Houston Station.
Yeah.
You know, that site has been empty for many years now.
They're
now talking about a 30-storey building there on that site.
Yeah, and 42 stories for the middle of, on the Grand Canal, just on the other side. So
and all the rows and court cases they're having with Johnny Ronan around the Salesforce Tower that he wants to build higher along the quays, and maybe he'd be able to do it now.
Well, that's it. He's firmly in favour of it, I would think.
Oh no, Mr. McCary. Would he like a 30-storey building, or would he like a one-on-one?
He'd like a one-on-one, I'd say. So Mr. McCary, he's well-known chipper in the area, 6M outlets around the North County, around this particular area. I've been in marketing a long time, and it's good idea to associate some campaigns with things are going on. So he has a full-page ad in lots of the papers over the weekend, big strap headline on it, Treat Your Valentine. Now, what I want to say is, and I know I'm going to get into trouble for this, but if there's any young guys out there listening, thinking next Monday on Valentine's Day, she says, let's go out for something to eat. If you think a batter burger, chips and a Coke is going to cut it, this is a health warning from Near FM. Think again.
Ken, have you never heard the phrase, of course I love you, didn't I buy you chips?
Yes, but And that was Elvis Presley and his Little Wooden Heart. You're welcome back to The Week in Review. Myself, Ken Kilbride, Declan Ralph and Sarah Birmingham. Dublin City Council has a new publication that captures the life and work of Sarah Cecilia Harrison, who is a woman of talent, principle and drive who immersed herself in the political and social life of Dublin. Harrison's contributions to the artistic and political life have been previously overlooked, and she's become the forgotten women of our history. So Margarita Capock, who is an art historian, writer and creator, who's the key contributor to the book, has joined us now to tell us a little bit about the life of Sarah Cecilia Harrison and the new book that's come out. So good afternoon, Margarita. How are you? Welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much, Ken. Yeah, delighted to be here.
Oh, it's our pleasure entirely. Obviously just let's jump in, found out about this during the week. So who is or who was Cecilia Harrison?
Sarah Cecilia Harrison was really a compelling woman. She broke new ground as an artist, as an activist, as a suffragist, and then as the first woman to be elected as a city councillor for Dublin in 1912. And she was born, she came from a Northern Irish Protestant family that were steeped in politics. She was born in County Down, in Hollywood in County Down, in 1863. And she was a grandniece of the United Irishman, Henry Joy McCracken. So when she was 10, she moved with her family. Her father passed away and the family moved to London. And then at the age of 15, she entered the Slade School of Art, which was a recently opened school and later became very, very prestigious. And she spent the next 7 years there learning her craft as a painter. And she was really a star pupil there, Ken. She was she won several prizes and several awards. And then after she graduated from the Slade, she travelled a bit. She travelled to Italy and she travelled to France and the Netherlands, painting and sketching and visiting galleries. And then she returned to London and started to paint portraits, looking first of all at her family, and then she moved on to receive commissions for portraits. But she always kept her connection with Ireland and was a regular visitor to the country. And then she moved to Ireland eventually in 1904. She moved to Dublin permanently, and she really established herself, you know, as one of the leading portraitists, but also she became really well known for her work in social activism and her involvement in a huge range of philanthropic, political and civic campaigns. So she's quite a remarkable individual who's been completely forgotten in the history of the time.
So that's interesting. She has, you know, an interesting life. But what drew you to her story?
Well, I was working in the Hugh Lane as head of collections, and she's well represented in the Hugh Lane collection. And I remember looking at some of her self-portraits, one of which is on the front cover of the book, and thinking she was a brilliant portrait painter and very striking looking. She was about almost 6'2" and very distinctive looking. And I remember thinking, who is this woman? And I looked in, you know, the files, and I realised there was very little written on her. So I started to research her then and try and find out more about her. And I began to realise that she was this incredible woman who many people had never heard of. And I gave a lecture in City Hall as part of a Women in History series of talks. And the city archivist at the time, Dr. Mary Clark, had invited me to give that talk, and she said, would I consider writing a book, because she said most of the audience never knew of Harrison. So I started researching her in further depth, and, you know, looked at all the paintings, you know, tried to locate as many paintings as I could in private and public collections, and also looked at her letters, which are housed in the National Library of Ireland. So the book was commissioned in 2019, so I spent the past 2 years looking at her in depth, and then I invited other contributors to the book. So because of the fact that she was so multifaceted, I invited the historian Professor Senia Pasita from Oxford University, who has written about Harrison's role in the suffragist movement in Dublin and in the UK, and also Ciarán Wallace has written about Harrison's time as a city councillor and the campaign she was involved in, and Hannah Baker, who's doing a PhD on Harrison in Trinity, she has written on Harrison's time at the Slade School of Art. So it really, I think the book really gives a very good kind of well-rounded feature on Harrison. She's she is so interesting, and the fact that it wasn't just an art history book, it was a book that covered all these other facets to her life. And, you know, as I said, she wasn't well known at all. I mean, for over three decades, she was working away in Dublin as a councillor for 3 years, and then as a champion of the poor and the unemployed and marginalised citizens in Dublin. And yet nobody in Dublin knows her name at the moment, and hopefully this book will correct that.
Well, if we just maybe jump in there, just in terms of, you know, we were talking about the historical context and things like that, but, you know, we look at, not saying from the tabloid side, you know, you mentioned Hugh Lane, good friend, perhaps it's Valentine's weekend, perhaps they were more than good friends, perhaps they were engaged before his death in 2015.
Well, this was something that was caused Harrison's reputation to be not tarnished as such, but it caused her to be slightly ostracised after Hugh Lane's death. So she met Hugh Lane. She possibly met him in London because they would have moved in the same circles, and she was an artist and he was an art dealer. And then when she moved to Dublin and he started his campaign in earnest for a gallery of modern art, she really became very, very involved. And she did correspond with him extensively. He was based in London. She was the person who was in Dublin. So she was really keeping him updated on all the twists and turns of this. And she did write to him, and there's nothing that I've seen in the letters, you know, that would suggest that they weren't anything but close friends. But after his untimely death on the Lusitania in 1915, she claimed two things. She claimed that the will that had been that he had originally written in 1913, and then the unwitnessed codicil that was found at the National Gallery, she claimed that they were faked documents. And then later on, she claimed that she had been engaged to Hugh Lane. And this is the really perplexing thing about Harrison, because the thing is, she was very scrupulously honest and in all other facets. So why she claimed that she was engaged to him is unknown. And she ended up then falling out with his family. She remained fully committed to the Hugh Lane Gallery, in terms of the establishment of a permanent home to it, but it's something that really meant that she was ostracised by Hugh Lane's aunt, Lady Gregory, because people said that that they weren't engaged. And there's no evidence to say that they were engaged, but having said that, Lane had been engaged before, and it was a very low-key thing. So there is a question as to why Harrison made that claim, which was seen as very outrageous the time.
Thanks very much for that. Just before we wrap up, do we have a memorial to Cecilia? Should we have a memorial to Cecilia? And if someone wanted to get the book, where would they get it?
Well, so the book is available in all good local bookshops, and it's also available on the Four Courts Press website, so fourcourts.ie. In terms of a memorial, on Harrison's grave in Mount Jerome Cemetery just simply has the epitaph, "Artist and Friend of the Poor." So in a way that sort of encapsulates what she did during her lifetime. But she was very involved in establishing memorials for other people. For example, there's a bench in St. Stephen's Green that she had designed and erected for the Haslams, who were a couple who were involved in the suffragists movement. And she also had a plaque for Hugh Lane put up in St. Anne's Church in Dawson Street. And I hope that this book really is the beginning of, you know, the proper recognition for her. And, you know, a memorial obviously is a different thing, but it's just that the purpose of this book is that people are aware of her and aware of the really important contribution that she made.
Thanks very much
to
for
the
that.
City of Dublin.
Really appreciate it. And I'll go ahead and get myself a copy very shortly.
Great. Thank you, Ken.
Thanks a lot, Margarita. Bye bye.
Thanks a million to Margarita. Very interesting story, Ken.
Indeed it is, yes. And it's one of those unknown stories.
Yeah, it's great to bring it back and record it and have it there for everybody forever. Now, coming up in the second half of Week in Review, Sarah is going to chat to Liz Roach about the new contemporary dance production she has called The Here Trio. Interesting title. We'll find out about that about 1:15. Before we finish up then, we'll have local jobs and volunteering opportunities as well.
90.3.
This is Near FM. Near FM.
Join Joe Keegan for the Groovalicious Radio Show every second Saturday from 6:30 p.m. bringing you all things soulful, soul classics, funk, disco and soulful house every second Saturday from 6:30 p.m. here on Near FM.
Horselips to hair squid, rock to rap, punk to pop, and all genres in between. Join me, Michael Sullivan, every Saturday night between 8:30 p.m. and 10 p.m. for Irish to the Core. I'll be playing the best in Irish contemporary music from the past to the present. So don't forget, every Saturday night between 8:30 p.m. and 10 p.m. Irish to the Core on Near 90.3 FM.
Near FM's business show, Nearby Business, is on Thursday evenings at 6 p.m. Join Declan Ralph and Dave Daly for the local, national and international business news headlines with a focus on what affects us here in Northeast Dublin. Each week, the Business Of section will focus on a different business sector or industry. And there'll be regular features on HR, technology, business supports and a host of special features as well. That's Thursday, 6 p.m. for Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM.
Racism is wrong and unjust.
We stand for an Ireland where we all take part in the fight for equality and equal rights
In housing, jobs, welfare,
justice,
law,
health
and education.
Let's treat each other with love, respect and dignity regardless of our nationality and ethnicity.
We stand for equality for all, one human race,
one world,
one love.
INAR, the Irish Network Against Racism, encourages you to report all racist incidents to ireport.ie, the online racist incident reporting system.
Near FM, supporting equality.
90.3. This is Near FM.
The Week in Review with Declan Ralph. For stories you haven't heard anywhere else on the radio this week.
And welcome back to the programme. Don't forget, if you'd like to get involved in the show or you'd like me to feature something on the show that you're interested in, well, you can contact me right now. The text line is open. The number is 087 69 44 500. That's 087 69 44 500. That's while the show is on the air. Or you can get in touch at any time on Twitter at NearFM, at Declan Ralph, hashtag Week in Review.
Local events with Sarah Birmingham.
Welcome back, Sarah. We're going to look at some of the events, and the first one we're going to talk about is the fact that the Henrietta Street's Tea Time Talks continue.
Yeah, they sure do, Declan. I think it's nice. I know Mary mentioned their events about, you know, keeping the best from what we've learned over the last 2 years in terms of events, and this is something that 14 Henrietta Street seems to be kind of really taking into their work now as well. Their Tea Time Talks series, which is a series of talks that all sorts of issues and cultural issues relating to 14 Henrietta Street. You know, it had taken place online, I suppose, over the time of the pandemic, and now it continues on, and they have their February talk taking place this coming Wednesday. It's the 16th of February, and it's going to put a spotlight on a woman by the name of Mary Wollstonecraft. Again, a little bit like Ken's conversation there, maybe a woman whose name wouldn't be on the tips of too many tongues, but in 1787, 27-year-old Mary arrived in Ireland to take on the role of governess to 14-year-old Margaret King, who was the daughter of Viscount Kingsborough, and the King's family townhouse was 15 Henrietta Street, so steeped in the area. This free online talk taking place on Wednesday will see historian Fergus Whelan discuss the life of writer, philosopher, and again another strong women's rights advocate, Mary Wollstonecraft, her impact on the life of Margaret King and the King family of Henrietta Street, and the links that bound the two women even after Wollstonecraft's untimely death. Should say. Tea Time Talks is a series of talks that's inspired by the history, people and surroundings, as I mentioned, of 14 Henrietta Street. And the talk taking place on Wednesday, as per all in the series, will be presented online through Zoom beginning at 7 o'clock. So, you know, if you're someone that kind of enjoyed, I suppose, being able to flick on and find out different things and check out different things from the comfort of your own home, well, then that's still very much there. You can find out all the information on that at 14henriettastreet.ie if you just click on the What's On tab there. That'll bring you to all the information on the Tea Time Talks.
Yeah, it's great that we have the option now of the online option and the in-person option. And an in-person option you have is at the Abbey.
It sure is, yeah. So again, it's fantastic, and I think there's still a sense of kind of giddiness almost about being able to get out and about now and go back to theatres. And the Abbey Theatre is producing the Martina Carr work, Portia Coughlin. It opened at the National Theatre last night, and it's set to run there until the 16th of March. So Portia Coughlin tells the story of a woman on her 30th birthday who doesn't have the heart to celebrate. It's the anniversary of her twin brother, Gabriel, who died 15 years earlier. Is it her fate to join him, or can she escape the past and find her place in the world? Martina Carr's haunting play premiered at the Abbey Theatre in 1996, And this new production, I guess, for 2022, is directed by Caroline Byrne, and it stars Olivier Award winner Denise Goff in the title role. It's staging at the Abbey Mondays to Saturdays at 7:30 every day, with a matinee there then at 2:00 on Saturdays. And there are lots of different ways as well that you can kind of check out the Abbey's works. I think that's something that is a real asset of theirs. They have sign language interpreted performances, audio described and captioned performances. They're really trying to make it accessible to as many as possible. The tickets are priced from €15 for the show, and they're available now from abbeytheatre.ie.
Not to be outdone, the Gate are getting in on the action as well.
Yeah, they have to. I think, you know, if there's one theme coming through today, it's the amount of artistic works now that are being hosted by our theatres and venues. And, you know, if you ever wanted to check one out, I think now is a good time. The Gate, yeah, I mean, we chatted before a week or two ago about whether Dublin Airport should be named after James Joyce, and, you know, maybe Samuel Beckett might have something to say about that as well. But certainly a stunning revival of Beckett's comic tragic masterpiece Endgame is going to premiere at the Gate again this coming Wednesday, the 16th of February, so you might be busy that night. The production is brought to life by Broadway director Danya Tamer, and it centres on the fractious relationship between the tyrant Ham, who's played by Frankie Boyle, and his boy servant Clive, played by Robert Sheehan. So some big names in that one. It's a darkly funny tale, and it tells the story of Ham's parents, who live in dustbins, having been tossed aside by an uncaring world. It's now 65 years since the premiere of the original production of Endgame, but it keeps a kind of certain relevance and a real kind of connection, I suppose, with the all the challenges of today's world as well, and it's equally kind of engaging for modern audiences. It's running at 7:30 again there at the Gate from Monday to Saturday evenings, and the matinees there are on Saturdays at 2:30. You can get tickets for that from gatetheatre.ie, or it's from the box office at the Gate, of course, either.
Love is in the air as well in town.
We couldn't leave it aside, for
no,
sure.
Absolutely
and I
not.
Think, I think you spoke earlier about the chips and stuff. I mean, it doesn't sound too bad to me. I don't know, but if you wanted to get a line.
See, Ken just doesn't know. He just doesn't understand this, Sarah, really. He really doesn't, yeah.
Nah, Declan, I don't know, yeah. Look, we're... we don't have the same standards, perhaps. But, yeah, in the cinemas in town, they're delighted, I think, now to be back in action, and they're presenting, you know, a real kind of variety of works. You have the Lighthouse there, the IFI, and the Sugar Club as well, all getting in on the action this weekend. And I think the weather is looking a little bit gloomy outside, so it might be one that you might fancy tipping in tonight, maybe, or over the weekend. It's sure to be a busy weekend, no doubt, with Valentine's Day coming up on Monday, but lots on offer there at all of the cinemas and theatres around the place. Lighthouse are celebrating what they call Valentine's and Galentine's weekend, with a specially curated programme of movies with everything from Casablanca to Michelle's High School Reunion, which I haven't seen, to Moonlight, a more recent work, and lots more there to look forward to as well. The Sugar Club then are taking a slightly different kind of tongue-in-cheek approach, I think, a little bit. They're presenting the Rocky Horror Picture Show as what they call an anti-Valentine's life. So that might be another one for after tips maybe there, but they have a cast performing the really much-loved scenes, I suppose, from that 1975 cult classic, and no doubt, as happens at these places, people will be up singing and dancing and throwing the popcorn in the seats and whatever else. They'll have treats, props, prizes, guest performances, so it's a film and a whole lot more besides as well, I think. And you can find out more on that by clicking on the tickets tab on thesugarclub.com. And again, for the Lighthouse, or indeed the likes of the IFI or any of the cinemas around, they all have their websites there. The Lighthouse's one is lighthousecinema.ie.
Yeah, there really is so much on. And just to add to that, there's a bit of improv coming up at the Shinné venue.
There is, yeah, so that's Thursday evening. This coming Thursday evening, the Improvised Music Company are going to present the Joe O'Callaghan Quartet, and this one is all about jazz. So if you like the the sounds and the vibe of jazz, well then the Cine venue at Upper Ormond Quay in Dublin One there is the place to head on Thursday evening. It's going to be filled with the smooth sounds of Irish jazz guitar supremo Joe O'Callaghan, and he is going to be joined by the Sankara Trio and the drummer John Daly. Joe is a leading figure in the Irish jazz scene, for anyone familiar with that world, and his playing is characterised by extended tasteful lines, contemporary chord shapes and an instinct for rocking out when the need arises, and by all means that need arises at times for sure. As a quartet, the Sankara Trio and John Daly make up a musical supergroup who can really turn their hands to anything from lyrical to avant-garde to straight up swing and just about everything in between as well. This is a gig that was rescheduled from November with all the comings and goings since then, so it's sure to go down a treat with the fans who've been looking forward to it or looking forward to getting back to live concerts. Indeed, the tickets there are available from just €12, and doors open at 2 for the event at 8 o'clock on Thursday evening. It's music from 8:30, so get along there or head over to the events tab at improvisedmusic.ie, and you can get in on the jazz scene that way.
Absolutely, and nobody can accuse us now of not having something for everybody on the Week in Review today in the events. We have a tea time talk that you can do from the comfort of your own home. We have two plays, one in the Abbey, one in the Gate, and then we have the jazz music as well. We have the cinema opportunity, and not to be outdone, there is also an orchestral extravaganza coming as well.
That's quite a way of putting it, Declan, but when you put it like that, you know, there's lots to look forward to at the moment, I think, yeah. So this is the Festival of Youth Orchestras, and it's coming to the National Concert Hall there next Saturday, the 19th of February, and it's going to be presented by the Irish Association of Youth Orchestras. So the festival is an annual celebration of young musicians and young orchestral musicians, of course, and it sees a great variety of music, which is really, first and foremost, I guess, played by young people, for young people. Not too sure if I fit into that category myself quite anymore, but I think this is particularly young and emerging and learning, I suppose, really musicians, and the chance again to see them, you know, before maybe their name is really up in lights. The festival is going to feature the City of Belfast School of Music Junior Chamber Orchestra, Music Generation Loud Senior String Orchestra, the Irish Midlands Youth Orchestra, the Queen's University Symphony Orchestra, the list goes on. And they're going to perform both classical works and modern arrangements in a variety of styles. It all kicks off at 3 o'clock next Saturday. It's family friendly, of course, with that youth dimension there. The tickets are priced at €20 for adults and €7.50 for children, and you can get yours or find out all about it by going to nch.ie.
Well, Sarah, there's no doubt you qualify for being young, way ahead of myself and Ken anyway. So it'll be a while before you catch up on us.
Sure.
Yeah, thanks a million.
That's okay.
Thanks a million for all the events.
Thanks.
Lots there, as I said, something for everybody in that bunch for sure. Now, you're going to stay with us. We're going to take a short break for a piece of music, and then you're going to talk to choreographer Liz Roach. So we'll chat to you then. The great Bobby Darin, Dream Lover on 90.3 Near FM. This is Week in Review. I'm Declan Ralph. I'm here with Ken Kilbride and Sarah Birmingham. Welcome back to the programme. Don't forget, if you'd like to get involved in the show or like me to feature something on the show that you're interested in, well, you can contact me right now by text to 087 69 44 500. That's while the show is on the air. Or you can get in touch anytime on Twitter at Near FM, at Declan Ralph, hashtag Week in Review. And welcome back, Sarah, to the programme. Sarah, you're going to have a chat now with Liz Roach.
Yeah, absolutely, Declan. I'm delighted to be able to highlight yet another really creative, innovative and I'm sure hugely entertaining event taking place in Dublin over the next couple of days. And I think it's just a real testament to the arts community that we can chat now with Liz Roach of the Liz Roach Company. And they are bringing the Here Trio to the Project Arts Centre stage from Thursday to Saturday next week. As we mentioned earlier, it's a contemporary dance production which conveys a timely exploration of borders and belonging, and it's choreographed by Liz Roach and features dancers Ryan O'Neill, Gloria Ross Abelana and Lucia Kickham. And I'm delighted to be joined by Liz to find out a little bit more about what's in store. Thanks so much for joining us, Liz, and I guess, yeah, I mean, a good place to start would be can you tell us a little bit about the Here Trio and what's set to be staged at the Project Arts Centre?
Well, hi Sarah, how you doing?
Yeah, so the piece itself, I suppose a good starting point with the piece is really, you know, how it was made, like, you know, the inspiration for making it. And the piece was commissioned by a company in Belfast called Maiden Voyage, and we co-produced the piece originally with Maiden Voyage, and they were commissioning a programme of works, I suppose around the time of Brexit, to really think about the ideas of borders and belonging and everything that was coming up at that time. And I suppose it was a real moment where, you know, it was a good 6 months before Brexit, and so it was just that sense of returning back to the idea of a border or the idea of separation, and, you know, what, how that felt, having, you know, the last, you know, we haven't had to deal with that in the same way over the last number of years. So I suppose a lot of the piece began in that sense of returning back to that, you know, watchfulness or rigidness, or that fear, I suppose, that we could have been facing into. And I suppose it was also at a moment where things felt that they were really dividing. People were, you know, maybe it was to do with, I suppose, the general Brexit, and just that feeling of, really, people being on one side or the other, you know, and maybe before that it all felt a bit more, in, you know, less separated. So the piece kind of came out of that, you know, like, what does it mean, you know, and what does it mean for like, I suppose in dance what we really look at is what happens with your body, you know, how does your body experience things that maybe aren't languaged yet or that you're not even fully aware of. So
I think that lens is really interesting of how you can interpret a theme, such a global, political, kind of intangible, maybe event like Brexit, into, it's so external and huge, but then to bring it back to the sense of the individual body and how you can kind of present that on stage or choreograph that, you know, it's an interesting kind of theme, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's also like what ends up happening in the piece is that it's actually really charged, you know, and really dynamic. And I suppose there's this kind of sense of being on edge, and the dancers trying to manage that feeling all the time. Not all the time, but quite a bit of the time, really. I think there is that sense, like the piece is really energetic and it's really dynamic, and it's also, there's quite a lot of text in it, you know, that is generated from me and from the dancers talking about, you know, how, you know, scars on the body and scars on landscape, and, you know, how buildings can be knocked down and rebuilt but things remain on the body, and like, I suppose just all those kind of so that's the thing with dance, it tries to notice the things that we don't have a lot of time to notice in our everyday life, and sort of bring us in touch with them.
Absolutely. I think the way you mentioned it there about maybe giving a different language to something that it's hard to describe in words, or that words are kind of inadequate sometimes. You know, how is the piece kind of, obviously it was produced first, as you mentioned, in 2020, and, you know, all the events that have happened in the world since. What is it like to be bringing it back now to a production, you know, in a live venue for audiences, and how have the events of the last few years, I suppose, you know, impacted on that, or indeed on the dance community wider even?
Yeah, like, I think specifically to the Hair Trio, we were due to perform it kind of in the middle of 20, like, it, first of all, it premiered in Belfast. It got cancelled then in Dublin because of lockdown. And then later that year, we were meant to do it again. And then at the last minute, we couldn't. So we ended up filming it. And we live streamed that. So actually, what came out of that was sort of, you know, that's the thing, I think, with artists. You always try and find the good. So we sort of, what came out of that was sort of this real exploration into film, you know, and how film, in a way, you know, holds on to something, that the body is really present and dancers are really present, but then film is like a memory of a thing. So we ended up now for this new piece, I've ended up incorporating a lot of that film. So it's a real back and forth between film and live dance. And I suppose it brings up all those ideas of what's here and now and what it is to be right here and present in live performance. And then
there's still that kind of film element that sort of, you know, is very connected to the dance, but it's still just a time before. And then I suppose in general, like the whole, especially for dance, like the whole COVID situation, it's like your worst nightmare. You know, we kind of, you can't be around each other, you can't sweat together, you can't touch, you can't do anything. So that has been really challenging. But, you know, we did find a way to still produce throughout, and it's coming back now, so we're just delighted. We did do a show last November with Dublin Dance Festival. Yeah.
And we spoke with Dublin Dance Festival actually on the programme at that time, you know, and it was an interesting kind of a tiptoe out into the world, I suppose, for productions like that. I mean, hopefully it feels more confident now, perhaps, that, you know, it looks as though things have gone in the right direction on a more permanent basis, hopefully, and we can step out of the cocoon a little bit and go back to the venues and see something new, maybe, and not take the arts for granted, hopefully, possibly, like maybe happened before. But if people would like to check out the Hear Trio, or indeed find out any of the work that you're doing at the moment, where is the best place for them to get that information?
Well, you can either go on to lizroachcompany.com or Project Arts Centre. Onto projectartcentre.ie, their website, and you can book tickets. And between both sites, you can, you know, you can subscribe to the company, and also then you can find out everything you need to know about the upcoming piece and also other pieces coming up at Project. Yeah,
absolutely. We'd really encourage people to do that. I think I'll be doing it myself. It sounds fantastic, you know, and the very best of luck with it. And thanks so much for joining us, just to give us a little flavour of what's in store there.
Oh, thank you. Brilliant. Thanks.
And thanks a million to Liz, and thanks a million to Sarah as well. Well, now it's time to let you know about some jobs and volunteering opportunities that are available locally. I take these from the activelink.ie website, where there are literally hundreds of opportunities. And this week, in fact, there are 37 requests for volunteers and 350 job offers, believe it or not. Now, the volunteering opportunity I want to make you aware of is one from Alone. As you know, Alone is a national organisation that works in communities locally right across the country and here in the north side of Dublin as well. They strive to enable older people to age at home safely and securely for as long as they wish to do so. They also work with older people, including those who are lonely, isolated, frail or ill, homeless, living in poverty, or are facing any other difficulties. Now, they're looking for support and befriending volunteers, and they're looking for you to commit to 1 hour a week for 1 year. Now, if you'd like to find out more about the opportunity or to start the application, well, you can visit their website, alone.ie/volunteers. alone.ie/volunteers. So the job opportunity to highlight this week is a local one as well. The Northside Traveller Support Group was incorporated under the Companies Act in February 1988 with the trading name of TravAct. It started as a small group of community-minded individuals from both the traveller and the settled communities, and has grown over the years. They pride themselves on the very high quality of services that they bring to the local community. Now, they are looking to recruit people to their sessional youth worker panel. And the panel will consist of 3 to 4 sessional youth workers who will be periodically called in to provide necessary support in delivering youth services in conjunction with the permanent youth staff in TravAct. If you're interested in that, you can only apply by post. They say they won't accept any email applications. So you need to pop in the post 3 copies of your CVs, including names of 2 referees, a detailed cover letter explaining your qualifications and your experience and your interest in working within a traveller-specific community development organisation, and why you feel you'd be suitable for the roles. And then send them to the manager, Northside Travellers Support Group, trading as TravAct, and you send it to TravAct Outreach Centre, Clonshock Drive, Priorswood, Coolock, that's Dublin 17, and the air code is D17HK27. That's D17HK27. And the closing date is the 21st of February. Well, believe it or not, that's it for this week, for the Week in Review. Thanks a million to all our contributors to the programme today. And as always, if you want to get in touch, well, the best way to do that is on Twitter at Near FM. at Declan Ralph, hashtag week in review. So from Sarah, from Ken and myself, Declan Ralph, we'll all be back at the same time next week, 12:30, Saturday lunchtime. See you soon on the radio. Bye for now. Bye bye.